I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. On Monday, when the clock struck midnight, the 2018 session of the Maryland General Assembly came to a close. Republican Governor Larry Hogan and the Democratic leadership of the House and Senate all hailed the session as a success, applauding the bipartisan tone that led to passage of bills on gun regulation, school safety, licensing for the medical marijuana industry, tax relief, health care, and funding for education. Today on Midday, my guests are four legislators, two Republicans and two Democrats, who will reflect on what hit and what missed in this year's General Assembly. Senators J.B. Jennings and Bill Ferguson and delegates Kathy Shalega and Luke Clippinger join me. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Rapture, Blister, Burn at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Today, we're going to take a look at what was accomplished by our legislators in Annapolis during the 2018 Maryland General Assembly, which ended on Monday night. Governor Hogan has signed more than 100 bills into law since then, and he's let several become law without his signature. More than 3,100 bills were introduced this year. That's a record number. We'll talk with two Republicans and two Democrats this afternoon to get their impressions of what the governor has said is the most productive session of his four-year tenure. Two of our guests represent Baltimore City, two represent Baltimore and Harford counties. Coming up later in the program, Republican delegate Kathy Shalega and Democratic delegate Luke Clippinger join me. But first, two senators from opposite sides of the aisle. Senator J.B. Jennings is a Republican who represents the 7th District, which includes parts of Baltimore and Harford counties. He was elected in 2011 and has served as the minority leader since 2014. He joins us on the line from the campus of UMBC in Catonsville. Senator, welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Senator Bill Ferguson represents District 46 in Baltimore City. Like Senator Jennings, he was also elected in 2011. He's been a member of the Budget and Taxation Committee since 2015. And last year, he became the chair of the Executive Nominations Committee. And he's with me here in Studio A. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org, and our Twitter handle, at Midday WIPR. Senator Ferguson, let me start with you. One of the more contentious issues had to do with this bill that passed and then was vetoed by the governor, and then the veto was overridden by the legislature. The 21st Century School Facilities Act takes the oversight of school construction away from the Board of Public Works and puts it into a special commission. You supported this bill, and it did pass. Why do you think this is a good move?
Yeah, I actually believe that this is going to be one of the long-term transformative bills that we had passed this year. I think it ended up being a great bill. I understand the concerns that some individuals had about sort of the process of BPW versus a commission. But fundamentally, this bill came from what was called the Knott Commission, which was a large group of individuals for about an 18-month period, looked at how does Maryland deal with school construction? How do we become more effective, more efficient, more flexible? How do we save money and build schools faster? I mean, we have billions of dollars of need, not just in Baltimore City, but across the state for our school facilities. And so what this bill did was set up a brand new framework for moving forward and creates a new commission. It's very similar to what some other states are doing. Bob Gorell, who is the executive director of the IAC, came from New Mexico, which is a state that's actually moving rapidly to build buildings more effectively. And so we
modeled. Remind us, the IAC.
What was the interagency committee is now the interagency commission.
And this will be a group appointed by the leadership in the legislature.
And the governor. So mm-hmm. The majority of the appointments are the governor for the commission, and then two from the Senate president, two from the Speaker of the House. School construction is inherently political. That is the nature of building schools. And so what we were trying to create was a merit-based process that was responsive to local priorities and that really it was the quality of a project that would drive the day, not the politics, as much as would be feasible. And so I'm a strong proponent of this bill. I think it was the right way to go. I do understand some of the concerns, which I'm sure Senator Jennings will mention. But, you know, I really do think this is going to have a big impact to get schools built faster and more effectively in Maryland.
All right. So, Senator Jennings, mention away. The governor has pledged to reverse the General Assembly on this particular issue. This is in the context of a session that, as I mentioned in the opening, he generally considers to be a great example of bipartisanship and cooperation. But you opposed this bill like the governor does. How come?
So as Senator Ferguson said, the bill's pretty good, about 90% of it. It was a two-year commission put together that really went statewide, looked at school construction, and they put some good stuff in the bill. The problem was the last, if you want to call it, the 10% that we have an issue with that takes the Board of Public Works out of the process. Right now, you know, the Board of Public Works, it's three members. Two are elected statewide. That's the comptroller and the governor. And the third is the state treasurer, who's elected by the legislature. It's those three that make these decisions. And it was more the process that I have a problem with, that the bill came from the House. They put this amendment in there to change it from the Board of Public Works making these decisions to this commission that's now set up, these nine members. It was done quickly, rapidly. They voted it. I mean, they literally took the members of the committee off the floor. They voted it in what's called the Red Room, brought it back out. They took no amendments. The fact that this commission doesn't have term limits, they don't even have a time frame in their position. Those were the major issues we had, that normally something of this magnitude, you really work out in committee and you work out on the floor, and it was done in a rush manner because it had to get to the governor's desk, because there's a time frame from when he gets a bill, he has 7 days to sign it or veto it, and in order for him to veto it and get it back to the legislature in time, that's why they had to get it up there so quick. So that was the issues I had, the transparency of it. And it wasn't Senator Ferguson. I mean, he wasn't the committee chair. He's not the president of the Senate. It was the leadership that I thought rushed this and just really did a bad job.
Do you, Senator Jennings, have any concerns that a commission, as opposed to the Board of Public Works, would be open to undue influence from non-political actors?
This seemed absolutely.
To be something
Look,
that the governor
no matter
was
who
about.
You put, no matter who you put in that position, could face pressure. You know, once, because it'll be public who those members are, people will call them and they'll lobby them saying, hey, you got to take care of my school system or this project. It'll open it up just like anything else. But any major project we have or spending commission that we have, such as the Stadium Authority or the Maryland Transportation Authority, you know, both of those spend billions of dollars on projects, and they have much tighter requirements of what it takes to become a commission. Just to serve on that commission, how long you can serve. This bill was silent on that. It just says that two are appointed by the president, two are appointed by the speaker, and I believe it's five by the governor. It doesn't require what their qualifications have to be, what their background is. So it was very, very vague on all that stuff, and that was a major concern.
All right, Senator Ferguson, you introduced a bill called calling for audits of the Baltimore City Police Department. You want to establish a commission. You're going to establish a commission to restore trust in policing. This comes after the Gun Trace Task Force trials, in which some really heinous acts of Baltimore City police officers were exposed on the record. You represent the city of Baltimore. The mayor was against the idea of an outside commission. You were for it. How come?
Well, and I want to thank Delegate Corey McCray, who was the cross-file of the bill around the audits. And I think the initial impetus behind the bill was around kind of the use of overtime in the city. I had a specific example with the Casino Impact District, where we had a sub-district, and the lieutenant who was in charge for 18 months was coming to the committee that I sit on and telling all these things that were happening. Lo and behold, it was millions of dollars of overtime, not millions, hundreds of thousands of dollars of overtime that was being inappropriately, he was sort of siphoning it off personally and was just recently convicted for that. So I believe more eyes on the department is a good thing. The commission was in the same vein. We need to get to the bottom of what happened with this Gun Trace Task Force. It was an elite unit that committed truly heinous crimes for a long period of time. So we need to know who knew what, when did they know it, what did they know? so that we can move forward. That is a crime-fighting strategy. We need to restore trust in law enforcement, and we need to clear the air for the officers that do go to work every day honorably and work hard. You know, the mayor, I think, thought that there were already enough eyes on the problem. BPD is a state agency. A lot of folks don't know that. And so I thought that it was important that we had the imprimatur and the gravitas of the state looking into this. I think that, you know, now that it's passed, I think that she is more open to the idea, and hopefully we can all work together, because this is an issue that I think has kind of bipartisan support that we got to get past this.
And Senator Jennings, speaking of public safety, the legislature passed bills having to do with school safety, perhaps prompted by the school shooting not only in Parkland, Florida, but right here in Maryland. Are you satisfied that the bills that ended up getting to the governor's desk are adequate to the task?
I think they're a great start. You know, it was a true bipartisan work ethic to get this thing done between myself. Senator Ferguson really led the charge with regards to, once the bills were submitted, that, you know, coming up with compromises. Look, I'll be honest, I wish we could have gone further with putting school resource officers in every school, but it's got a very heavy fiscal note. There's also some issues about some school jurisdictions don't want them armed. Some do. But I can say right now that...
But you support having all of them armed. You support an armed resource officer in every school.
I do. But I also think it's up to the local jurisdiction and what they want to do. But I can tell you right now that starting this school year, it'll start, what, in 4 months with September, schools are safe, will be safer than they are now. And it was true. That's where Annapolis shined this year in getting that project done, or that bill passed. Governor signed it. And again, Senator Ferguson did an incredible job, as well as Senator Wall and Klaus Meyer. You know, the four of us really kind of worked this thing and worked with the House members to get it passed.
And Senator Ferguson, when it comes to gun regulation, bump stocks have been banned now in the state of Maryland. You also passed a red flag bill that allows police to seize the firearm of a person whom a court has deemed to be a risk either to him or herself or the community. That's also an unusual bill if you look nationally. How do you think that's going to help matters?
I'm very pleased that we passed this legislation. It was modeled off of an initiative in California. Really, the biggest beneficiaries of this process are the individuals themselves who are at threat or at risk of suicide. There were some horrific stories from parents who knew that there was that a loved one was sort of suffering a crisis and was sort of in emotional despair and had just wished they had a means to get guns out, you know, just a little bit of time, just some breathing space to sort of work things through, but unfortunately didn't happen. The other beneficiaries will be domestic violence potential victims when, you know, things get emotional in relationships and when something is as severe as it can be. There are a lot of spouses who are concerned what could happen with an individual with that has easy access to a firearm. And so I think this process was balanced. I think it was fair. And I think it will, you know, really protect kind of the most vulnerable, those who are suffering crises from using firearms in an improper way.
Senator Jennings, you're the minority leader. The governor, Senate President Miller, House President Bush have all characterized this session as particularly productive and somewhat unusually productive, given the fact that it is an election year. Everybody in the Senate, everybody in the House of Delegates is standing for re-election, as is the governor. He's got a host of people biting at the chomping at the bit to have the honor of opposing him in the November election. Do you share the governor's and the leadership's assessment that this was a productive year? Are you happy with, generally speaking, the results?
I am. If you had asked me this question in January before session started, I would have told you it was going to be ugly, we weren't going to get anything accomplished, it was going to be all political. Here we are, session over, and I'm shocked at where we stand. There were only about two or three bills that were truly political, one of those being the first bills you talked about that... you know, I do think it was kind of a political issue, but in the end, you know, we passed a lot of great stuff with regards to school safety, with the federal tax cut that took place, the fact that we had to do something here in Maryland, otherwise Maryland taxpayers would be paying more. You know, I'm very excited and happy with what we got done. And what's interesting is, you know, you would have thought that It would have been the Democrats versus the governor, and that's what we'd be battling now. The story is the comptroller fighting the Democratic Party and the unions fighting with the Senate president. That's kind of the story. The governor, you know, he stayed on message and target on this session, and that's not the story. So I think it was a good session.
Senator Ferguson, you concur?
I'd really agree. I think sometimes people forget that legislators are people too, and that we are as frustrated with sort of the inaction at the federal level just as much as anybody. And I think we see, just as others do, the huge challenges that our state faces. And, you know, I think we come to work with a desire to solve problems. And I think for the most part, we did that in a number of different ways. Could we have gone further in areas? No question. Did we pass things that weren't perfect? I'm sure we did. I really believe in 90 days we solved some, or we didn't solve, we moved forward on a number of different issues that were outstanding, and I'm proud of the work that we did.
And Senator Jennings, let me give you the last word here in this segment. Looking forward to the next session next year, if Governor Hogan is reelected, let's assume that for the moment. It's by no means a sure bet, but let's assume that he is. He's mentioned his desire to repeal the School Facilities Act. But what will be the priorities for Republicans moving into the 2019 session?
Well, I think the big thing this year will be, or next year, will be looking at redistricting and how we handle that with the new census coming up, and the gerrymandering of the districts, and ensuring that the districts are drawn in fair ways that allows the citizens to be represented fairly. You know, it's tough when you break up city and towns and they're represented by multiple legislators. It's not fair to the community. And I think that's the number one priority that you're going to see should the governor get reelected, myself get reelected. You know, those are issues that we're going to be pushing for.
How about term limits? The governor supports them. That didn't go anywhere in this term, in this session. What do you think about that, Senator Jennings? Do you think that's going to come up again?
I do. You know, it gets put in every once in a while. Legislators put it in, but it really doesn't go anywhere. It's a tough one. You know, for those on the outside, everybody loves term limits and they want them because, you know, they hate seeing people there forever or for a long time. But from somebody that's been there, it takes a couple of years to understand the process, how it all works, and be able to work well with each other. You know, Senator Ferguson and I were elected, 8 years ago, served 4 years on a committee together. Now we're in two different committees, and we both have been able to really accomplish a lot of great things because it's taken us some time to develop relationships and understand the process. So it'll be introduced, but I don't know where it'll go.
All right. Well, thanks to you both. I appreciate it. And we wish you luck as you continue your work and you continue your campaign for reelection. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Bill Ferguson represents Baltimore City. Senator J.B. Jennings represents Baltimore County and Harford County and serves as the minority leader in the Maryland Senate. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up after the break, more legislative reaction to the 2018 Maryland General Assembly. Delegates Kathy Schlage and Luke Klippinger join me. You can join us, too. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayWIPR. To follow me on Twitter, @TomHall, WIPR. You're listening to Midday. We appreciate that. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WIPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Jim Shea. He's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor, and he will join me live here in Studio A for the hour, and we hope you can join us as well. Coming up later today, a theater review with J. Wynn Russick. She'll give us her take on the current production at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. But first, back to our recap of the 2018 Maryland General Assembly. Now, perspectives from two members of the Maryland House. Republican Delegate Kathy Schlage, like Senator Jennings, with whom we spoke earlier, represents District 7 in Baltimore and Harford counties. She was first elected in 2011, and she has been the minority whip since 2013. She serves on the Health and Government Operations Committee, and she joins us this afternoon on the line from her office in Perry Hall. Delegate Schlage, welcome back to Midday.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And Democratic Delegate Luke Klippinger represents Baltimore City in District 46. He chairs the Democratic Caucus, and he serves on the Economic Matters Committee, and he's with us on the phone from Annapolis. Delegate Klippinger, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon.
You are welcome to join our conversation as well. 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, our Twitter handle at midday WIPR. So, Delegate Klippinger, if I can, let me start with you. There was a bill called SB 122, the Senate Bill 122, the Omnibus Crime Bill, which was winding its way through the process in the waning days of the session. And by the time the lights were turned off on Monday night, it had been broken into sort of component parts. This was a bill partially motivated by addressing the crime of or the problem of crime and violence in the city of Baltimore. Tell us what happened. That bill sort of got busted up into little sections. The whole thing didn't pass, but a few elements of it did. Explain what's now on the books.
There were two pieces of there were several pieces of legislation actually that moved forward in the last days of session. One of the pieces of legislation addressed a couple different issues related to violent criminals, to witness intimidation. We passed legislation that raised the penalties for people who commit subsequent violent offenses. We raised the maximum penalty for those people who commit the crime of witness intimidation. We also expanded the state's rules regarding expungement, and in what I believe is a historic step forward, we expanded the ability of people who have been convicted of theft, of burglary, and of possession with intent to distribute to get those criminal records expunged after 15 years. It is a step that we have not taken before in the state of Maryland, and it has the potential, I think, to change thousands of lives. And just very briefly, I mean, there's a person in my district in O'Donnell Heights who I got to meet who was convicted of possession with intent to distribute some time ago. I'm going to go back and make sure, but I think it was about 15 years ago. She has been doing everything that what she needed to do and more, and in fact had received scholarships to be able to go back to school at UMBC and get her diploma. What we did in those bills in the end is we targeted those people, that small number of people who commit violent crimes, while still providing additional ways forward for people who have gotten their life back on track so that we can remove the stigma of that felony conviction from their record. And I think it's going to mean a lot to thousands and thousands of people.
And Delegate Shalega, what's your take on this? One of the controversies surrounding the original Senate bill, the so-called Omnibus Bill, which the governor supported, and it was sponsored by a Democratic legislator, so it had bipartisan support. The controversy concerned an emphasis on mandatory minimum sentences, for example. What's your feeling about how this bill looks now and perhaps how it should have looked in a prior incarnation?
Well, Delegate Klippinger and I worked together on getting these other two bills passed. Of course, Senator Bobby Zirkin had the Senate bill that came over to the House. I thought that was a great bill. I would have loved to have seen that passed, but how you make the sausages, you know, you have to work together to get things done, and I was really happy to be working with Delegate Klippinger to try to get these two good pieces of legislation, Senate Bill 1137 and Senate Bill 101, out of the House. So, I think it goes back to what you were speaking with in the last segment with Senator Jennings and Senator Ferguson, that we really did have a feeling of bipartisanship this session, trying to work together to put our extreme differences aside and work together for the betterment of the state of Maryland, the people that are from Maryland. So I feel good about the session. I think it ended well. we got some things done on those crime bills, which, of course, eliminating parole eligibility for second-time violent offenders and toughening sentences on sexual abuse of minors. And so there were some really good things in those bills that our side of the aisle embraced.
And Delegate Klippinger, when it comes to public safety, as I mentioned, you know, there was some no small bit of controversy about this notion of mandatory minimum sentences. Sometimes the governor would refer to it as truth in sentencing. In other words, people are sentenced to a crime and then they're released on parole. Is there data that you know of that says that mandatory minimums, which take away the prerogative for sentencing from judges and put it in the hands of the legislature by way of statute, is there evidence, to your way of thinking, that this is going to become a deterrent to crime, that this is actually going to, punch a hole in this very difficult problem?
I think that what it does, first, when you talk about mandatory minimums, in my mind, mandatory minimums that are related to crimes that involve nonviolent acts, and I'm including drug possession in my mind as one of those nonviolent acts, those are absolutely proven not to help the people who have been sentenced in those cases, and in many cases, they don't address the overall issues related to mental health and addiction that need to be addressed in those specific cases. I think that when someone commits a violent crime twice, I think we as a society are in the right to say the second time you are going to get a higher penalty. You're going to get a higher penalty for committing an attempted murder twice or an armed robbery and a carjacking. These very, very serious crimes, the limited number of people who get convicted for a second violent crime is another thing to look at here, where it doesn't impact a huge number of people. Those people are the people who are causing the violence that's happening on our streets, and we have to have a clear message that says that is not acceptable.
Delegate Shalega, we have one of your constituents on the line, Morgan in Perry Hall. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for taking my question, Mr. Hall. To Delegate Shalega, I really have a question for you, why you voted nay against Senate Bill 1028, to ban conversion therapy for gay children in the state of Maryland. I was just really curious why you would do such a thing.
I appreciate you asking, Morgan, and I thought the bill went too far. And actually, I thought it was written in a way that was so broad that it prohibits talk therapy. Look, the conversion therapy, physical, I will even call it torture, is abhorrent, and no one's in favor of that. We had an amendment that we had offered in committee and on the floor. I would have absolutely voted for the bill if we had limited it to that. But the bill that passed actually includes talk therapy for adolescents. And I think, you know, it actually discriminated in my mind and in my view against talk therapy that would be talking about heterosexual and only allowed, in my mind, gay talk therapy. So I just didn't think that was right. I think that we should be talking to our adolescents who are exploring their sexual orientation about both sides of the aisle and not being prescriptive and only talking about the one side of the aisle.
Yeah, very interesting bill in that there was a daughter in the House and a father in the Senate who are on opposite sides of that bill. Delegate Klippinger, let's talk a little bit about medical marijuana. The Legislative Black Caucus, Cheryl Glenn, who's the outgoing chair of that caucus, very happy with the fact that a new bill was passed in this session that barely, that almost got passed at the very, literally the midnight hour in 2017, that will, according to her reckoning, result in more minority-owned businesses getting involved in the medical marijuana industry.
I think it's a great step forward. Certainly, Delegate Glenn and the Health and Government Operations Committee and committees in the Senate work very, very hard on this legislation to move the process forward, to clarify the process, and yes, to it will result in more minority participation in the medical marijuana process. And I sit not far away from Delegate Glenn in committee, and she poured her heart and soul into that for many, many years. And so I was very, very happy to see this cross the line for her.
And I'm a member of the Health and Government Operations Committee. We did work hard on that bill, expanding the number of processors as well, which I think is important to make sure that we have an adequate number of growers, but also processors, so that the product can get to the patients. I think, you know, the dispensaries are opening now, and really I think we're all happy that finally we're getting medical marijuana to patients in the state of Maryland.
And Delegate Shalega, you're also, of course, a member of the Maryland Women's Caucus, a bill about sexual harassment in Annapolis, in the legislature, was also passed. Give us your take on of the importance and significance of that.
Sure. I think this year, a lot of things had come to light about sexual harassment, not just in the workplace, but in the House of Delegates, Senate, you know, in the Maryland legislature. So we did put some more teeth into the process, as well as making sure that everybody's aware that, look, this is obviously not acceptable behavior anywhere. And so I think that was another issue that we all came together in agreement on.
And Delegate Klippinger, one of the semi-controversial issues that came up during this session had to do with casino gambling revenue. Delegate McIntosh, one of your colleagues in the House who represents the city, proposed a constitutional amendment that the voters will vote on in November to allocate and earmark gambling revenues specifically for education. The governor supported the idea but had a different way of doing it. He thought it should be done by statute rather than as a constitutional amendment, but it will go to the voters in November. First of all, I assume you expect the voters to approve it, and why do you think doing it as part of the Constitution is a better way to go than a statutory approach?
Well, I think that the voters will approve it, and I think it's important to do it as a constitutional amendment because it's consistent. It makes clear the implication that was certainly made when casinos were voted on by referendum in the earlier part of the decade. The implication was that this money was going to be going to schools and not just to replace existing funding, but to supplement funding to improve our schools, to better target neighborhoods and neighborhood schools that have higher rates of poverty. And I think that that makes this very, very important going forward, and I'll be excited to vote for the constitutional amendment, particularly as we look forward to implementing the recommendations of the Kerwin Commission. We were able to set aside $200 million in this year's budget to look forward to those recommendations in Kerwin. And I think that that will have a huge impact for schools across the state of Maryland, but particularly in Baltimore City.
And Delegate Shalega, when it comes to tax relief, ironically, this tax cut passed by congressional and senatorial legislators last December, the Trump tax cuts or the Ryan McConnell tax cuts, whatever you want to call them, are supposed to provide tax relief to a lot of people. But it turned out, given how that bill reconciles with Maryland law, a number of people in Maryland were going to experience a tax hike. You were able to address that problem for many, but not quite all of the residents of Maryland. Are you satisfied that adequate tax relief will, in fact, come to Marylanders?
No, actually, that would probably be my biggest disappointment in this last legislative session. The tax cuts that came out of Washington were phenomenal. Across the board, everybody's seeing their federal taxes decreased, and that's great, and you can see what a great help that is to the economy, and things are looking up. The high-tax states like Maryland, Massachusetts, California, are negatively impacted on the state side, not obviously the federal side. And so what we're seeing, and I'm hearing from constituents saying, hey, you know, I've got more in my paycheck because my federal taxes are lower, but I'm worried that I'm going to have to write a check to the state. So I really don't think that we adequately addressed that issue at all. And you can't, because people are not itemizing, we've simplified their federal tax system. It impacts that you can't itemize now on your state taxes if you don't itemize on your federal. And so I'm hopeful, though, next year when we come back after the election, that this will be an issue that we will address and that people will be doing their taxes right in the middle of session, and then we'll know that we really need to act and make sure that Marylanders get to keep their Maryland tax money and that they don't have to offset their federal tax cut with an increase in their Maryland taxes.
And, of course, next year, Delegate Klippinger, will not be an election year like it is this year. Certainly, voters are well aware of the fact that everything that happened in the session this year was done under the patina of the election cycle. Stephanie writes in that bipartisan and congenial, well, maybe it was, but oh, please, it's an election year, and the governor is running for re-election. In his first 3 years, he resorted to name-calling and making little digs at particular lawmakers. His media trolling of Stephanie Rawlings Blake was epic, and in his fourth year, all of a sudden, he sees the light, and he must work with the General Assembly to accomplish legislative goals. Please. Now, Delegate Klippinger, the leadership in the Senate and the House agrees with the governor that this was a particularly bipartisan, productive session. What's your take?
I think there were a lot of accomplishments that we were able to move forward in a bipartisan manner, but there are a lot of things that we were able to move forward as Democrats that speak to our values. As you mentioned in the last section of the broadcast, you know, we've been working very, very hard, and we just talked briefly on the response to the GOP's tax bill and the president's tax bill. I mean, we are going to save 92% of Marylanders about $400 a year. We are increasing the standard deduction to take into account the changes from the federal level. We think we've done as best as we can to figure out how to hold Marylanders harmless for these tax changes. I think there are that's been our priority all the way along the way, and that's one of the differences I think between the parties in this next election. On top of that, I mean, our commitment still to education and to improving our state schools has been consistent and going to continue to provide a strong distinction I think between the two parties going forward. But nevertheless. You know, we are heading into this next, how many months now? 7 months now, between now and the general election. I think there are going to be some clear distinctions that people are going to be able to make between whoever the Democratic nominee is and Governor Hogan.
And Delegate Chalega, let me give you the last quick word here. We are running out of time. There are 141 of your fellow delegates in the House. More than 40 of them will not return for one reason or the other next year. Do you expect next year to be a particularly different vibe than it was this year?
Of course, with all kinds of new folks, new faces in the legislature, it will obviously look much different, and I think next year we really will be embracing redistricting because we know that's going to be coming up. Governor Hogan, of course, that's been a major one of his platforms for the entire time that he's been in office, that we really need nonpartisan redistricting, and I believe when Governor Hogan gets reelected, we'll actually see that come to pass. So, you know, I think that Maryland's positioned well under Governor Hogan, and being able to create some bipartisanship, I think voters will just have to look back to when Governor O'Malley was governor and how partisan it was. Certainly, it's a different flavor today, and I like it. I think taxpayers, I think citizens like it, and hopefully we can continue that going forward.
Republican Delegate Kathy Shalega represents District 7, and Democratic Delegate Luke Klippinger represents District 46 in the Maryland House of Delegates. Thanks to you both. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after a break, a review with theater critic J. Wynn Russick. She's been to Frederick to check out the new show at the Maryland Ensemble Theater. She'll tell us what she thinks about it in exactly 90 seconds. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. On Monday, when the clock struck midnight, the 2018 session of the Maryland General Assembly came to a close. Republican Governor Larry Hogan and the Democratic leadership of the House and Senate all hailed the session as a success, applauding the bipartisan tone that led to passage of bills on gun regulation, school safety, licensing for the medical marijuana industry, tax relief, health care, and funding for education. Today on Midday, my guests are four legislators, two Republicans and two Democrats, who will reflect on what hit and what missed in this year's General Assembly. Senators J.B. Jennings and Bill Ferguson and delegates Kathy Shalega and Luke Klippinger join me. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Rapture, Blister, Burn at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Today, we're going to take a look at what was accomplished by our legislators in Annapolis during the 2018 Maryland General Assembly, which ended on Monday night. Governor Hogan has signed more than 100 bills into law since then, and he's let several become law without his signature. More than 3,100 bills were introduced this year. That's a record number. We'll talk with two Republicans and two Democrats this afternoon to get their impressions of what the governor has said is the most productive session of his four-year tenure. Two of our guests represent Baltimore City, two represent Baltimore and Harford counties. Coming up later in the program, Republican Delegate Kathy Shalega and Democratic Delegate Luke Klippinger join me. But first, two senators from opposite sides of the aisle. Senator J.B. Jennings is a Republican who represents the 7th District, which includes parts of Baltimore and Harford counties. He was elected in 2011 and has served as the minority leader since 2014. He joins us on the line from the campus of UMBC in Catonsville. Senator, welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Senator Bill Ferguson represents District 46 in Baltimore City. Like Senator Jennings, he was also elected in 2011. He's been a member of the Budget and Taxation Committee since 2015. And last year, he became the chair of the Executive Nominations Committee. And he's with me here in Studio A. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at WIPR.org, and our Twitter handle, at Midday WIPR. Senator Ferguson, let me start with you. One of the more contentious issues had to do with this bill that passed and then was vetoed by the governor, and then the veto was overridden by the legislature. The 21st Century School Facilities Act takes the oversight of school construction away from the Board of Public Works and puts it into a special commission. You supported this bill, and it did pass. Why do you think this is a good move?
Yeah, I actually believe that this is going to be one of the long-term transformative bills that we had passed this year. I think it ended up being a great bill. I understand the concerns that some individuals had about sort of the process of BPW versus a commission. But fundamentally, this bill came from what was called the Knott Commission, which was a large group of individuals for about an 18-month period, looked at how does Maryland deal with school construction? How do we become more effective, more efficient, more flexible? How do we save money and build schools faster? I mean, we have billions of dollars of need, not just in Baltimore City, but across the state for our school facilities. And so what this bill did was set up a brand new framework for moving forward and creates a new commission. It's very similar to what some other states are doing. Bob Gorell, who is the executive director of the IAC, came from New Mexico, which is a state that's actually moving rapidly to build buildings more effectively. And so we
modeled. Remind us, the IAC.
IAC, is... I'm sorry, is the what was the Interagency Committee is now the Interagency Commission.
And this will be a group appointed by the leadership in the legislature.
And the governor. So mm-hmm. the majority of the appointments are the governor for the commission, and then two from the Senate president, two from the Speaker of the House. School construction is inherently political. That is the nature of building schools. And so what we were trying to create was a merit-based process that was responsive to local priorities, and that really it was the quality of a project that would drive the day, not the politics, as much as would be feasible. And so I'm a strong proponent of this bill. I think it was the right way to go. I do understand some of the concerns, which I'm sure Senator Jennings will mention, but I really do think this is going to have a big impact to get schools built faster and more effectively in Maryland.
All right. So Senator Jennings, mention away. The governor has pledged to reverse the General Assembly on this particular issue. This is in the context of a session that, as I mentioned in the opening, he generally considers to be a great example of bipartisanship and cooperation. But you opposed this bill like the governor does. How come?
So as Senator Ferguson said, the bill's pretty good, about 90% of it. It was a two-year commission put together that really went statewide, looked at school construction, and they put some good stuff in the bill. The problem was the last, if you want to call it, the 10% that we have an issue with that takes the Board of Public Works out of the process. Right now, you know, the Board of Public Works, it's three members. Two are elected statewide. That's the comptroller and the governor. And the third is the state treasurer, who's elected by the legislature. It's those three that make these decisions. And it was more the process that I have a problem with, that the bill came from the House. They put this amendment in there to change it from the Board of Public Works making these decisions to this commission that's now set up, these nine members. It was done quickly, rapidly. They voted it. I mean, they literally took the members of the committee off the floor. They voted it in what's called the Red Room, brought it back out. They took no amendments. The fact that this commission doesn't have term limits, they don't even have a time frame in their position. Those were the major issues we had, that normally something of this magnitude, you really work out in committee and you work out on the floor, and it was done in a rush manner because it had to get to the governor's desk, because there's a time frame from when he gets a bill, he has 7 days to sign it or veto it, and in order for him to veto it and get it back to the legislature in time, that's why they had to get it up there so quick. So that was the issues I had, the transparency of it. And it wasn't Senator Ferguson. I mean, he wasn't the committee chair. He's not the president of the Senate. It was the leadership that I thought rushed this and just really did a bad job.
Senator Jennings, have any concerns that a commission, as opposed to the Board of Public Works, would be open to undue influence from non-political actors?
No matter who you put in that position, could face pressure. You know, once, because it'll be public who those members are, people will call them and they'll lobby them saying, hey, you got to take care of my school system or this project. It'll open it up just like anything else. But any major project we have or spending commission that we have, such as the Stadium Authority or the Maryland Transportation Authority, you know, both of those spend billions of dollars on projects, and they have much tighter requirements of what it takes to become a commission, to serve on that commission, how long you can serve. This bill was silent on that. It just says that two are appointed by the president, two are appointed by the speaker, and I believe it's five by the governor. It doesn't require what their qualifications have to be, what their background is. So it was very, very vague on all that stuff, and that was a major concern.
All right, Senator Ferguson, you introduced a bill called calling for audits of the Baltimore City Police Department. You want to establish a commission. You're going to establish a commission to restore trust in policing. This comes after the Gun Trace Task Force trials, in which some really heinous acts of Baltimore City police officers were exposed on the record. You represent the city of Baltimore. The mayor was against the idea of an outside commission. You were for it. How come?
Well, and I want to thank Delegate Corey McCray, who was the crossfile of the bill around the audits. And I think the initial impetus behind the bill was around kind of the use of overtime in the city. I had a specific example with the Casino Impact District, where we had a sub-district, and the lieutenant who was in charge for 18 months was coming to the committee that I sit on and telling all these things that were happening. Lo and behold, it was millions of dollars of overtime, not millions, hundreds of thousands of dollars of overtime that was being inappropriately, he was sort of siphoning it off personally and was just recently convicted for that. So I believe more eyes on the department is a good thing. The commission was in the same vein. We need to get to the bottom of what happened with this gun trace task force. It was an elite unit that that committed truly heinous crimes for a long period of time. So we need to know who knew what, when did they know it, what did they know, so that we can move forward. That is a crime-fighting strategy. We need to restore trust in law enforcement, and we need to clear the air for the officers that do go to work every day honorably and work hard. You know, the mayor, I think, thought that there were already enough eyes on the problem. BPD is a state agency. A lot of folks don't know that. And so I thought that it was important that we had the imprimatur and the gravitas of the state looking into this. I think that, you know, now that it's passed, I think that she is more open to the idea, and hopefully we can all work together, because this is an issue that I think has kind of bipartisan support that we got to get past this.
And Senator Jennings, speaking of public safety, the legislature passed bills having to do with school safety, perhaps prompted by the school shooting not only in Parkland, Florida, but right here in Maryland. Are you satisfied that the bills that ended up getting to the governor's desk are adequate to the task?
I think they're a great start. You know, it was a true bipartisan work ethic to get this thing done between myself. Senator Ferguson really led the charge with regards to, once the bills were submitted, that, you know, coming up with compromises. Look, I'll be honest, I wish we could have gone further with putting school resource officers in every school, but it's got a very heavy fiscal note. There's also some issues about some school jurisdictions don't want them armed. Some do. But I can say right now that...
But you support having all of them armed. You support an armed resource officer in every school.
I do. But I also think it's up to the local jurisdiction and what they want to do. But I can tell you right now that starting this school year, it'll start, what, in 4 months with September, schools are safe, will be safer than they are now. And it was true. That's where Annapolis shined this year in getting that project done, or that bill passed. Governor signed it. And again, Senator Ferguson did an incredible job, as well as Senator Wall and Klaus Meyer. You know, the four of us really kind of worked this thing and worked with the House members to get it passed.
And Senator Ferguson, when it comes to gun regulation, bump stocks have been banned now in the state of Maryland. You also passed a red flag bill that allows police to seize the firearm of a person whom a court has deemed to be a risk either to him or herself or the community. That's also an unusual bill if you look nationally. How do you think that's going to help matters?
I'm very pleased that we passed this legislation. It was modeled off of an initiative in California. Really, the biggest beneficiaries of this process are the individuals themselves who are at threat or at risk of suicide. There were some horrific stories from parents who knew that there was that a loved one was sort of suffering a crisis and was sort of in emotional despair and had just wished they had a means to get guns out, you know, just a little bit of time, just some breathing space to sort of work things through, but unfortunately didn't happen. The other beneficiaries will be domestic violence potential victims when, you know, things get emotional in relationships and when something is as severe as it can be. There are a lot of spouses who are concerned what could happen with an individual with that has easy access to a firearm. And so I think this process was balanced. I think it was fair. And I think it will, you know, really protect kind of the most vulnerable, those who are suffering crises from using firearms in an improper way.
Senator Jennings, you're the minority leader. The governor, Senate President Miller, House President Bush have all characterized this session as particularly productive and somewhat unusually productive, given the fact that it is an election year. Everybody in the Senate, everybody in the House of Delegates is standing for re-election, as is the governor. He's got a host of people biting chomping at the bit to have the honor of opposing him in the November election. Do you share the governor's and the leadership's assessment that this was a productive year? Are you happy with, generally speaking, the results?
I am. If you had asked me this question in January before session started, I would have told you it was going to be ugly, we weren't going to get anything accomplished, it was going to be all political. Here we are, session over, and I'm shocked at where we stand. There were only about two or three bills that were truly political, one of those being the first bills you talked about that... you know, I do think it was kind of a political issue. But in the end, you know, it's we passed a lot of great stuff with regards to school safety, with the federal tax cut that, that took place, the fact that we had to do something here in Maryland, otherwise Maryland taxpayers would be paying more. You know, I'm very excited and happy with what we got done. And what's interesting is, you know, you would have thought that it would have been the Democrats versus the governor, and that's what we'd be battling now. The story is the comptroller fighting the Democratic Party and the unions fighting with the Senate president. That's kind of the story. The governor, you know, he stayed on message and target on this session, and it's that's not the story. So I think it was a good session.
Senator Ferguson, you concur?
I'd wholly, you know, I'd really agree. I think sometimes people forget that legislators are people too, and that we are as frustrated with sort of the inaction at the federal level just as much as anybody. And I think we see just as others do the huge challenges that our state faces. And, you know, I think we come to work with a desire to solve problems. And I think for the most part, we did that in a number of different ways. Could we have gone further in areas? No question. Did we pass things that weren't perfect? I'm sure we did. You know, I really believe in 90 days we solved some, or we didn't solve. We moved forward on a number of different issues that were outstanding, and I'm proud of the work that we did.
And Senator Jennings, let me give you the last word here in this segment. Looking forward to the next session next year, if Governor Hogan is reelected, let's assume that for the moment. It's by no means a sure bet, but let's assume that he is. He's mentioned his desire to repeal the School Facilities Act. But what will be the priorities for Republicans moving into the 2019 session?
Well, I think the big thing this year will be, or next year, will be looking at redistricting and how we handle that with the new census coming up, and the gerrymandering of the districts, and ensuring that the districts are drawn in fair ways that allows the citizens to be represented fairly. You know, it's tough when you break up city and towns and they're represented by multiple legislators. It's not fair to the community. And I think that's the number one priority that you're going to see should the governor get reelected, myself get reelected. You know, those are issues that we're going to be pushing for.
How about term limits? The governor supports them. That didn't go anywhere in this term, in this session. What do you think about that, Senator Jennings? Do you think that's going to come up again?
I do. You know, it gets put in every once in a while. Legislators put it in, but it really doesn't go anywhere. You know, it's a tough one. You know, for those on the outside, everybody loves term limits and they want them because, you know, they hate seeing people there forever or for a long time. But from somebody that's been there, it takes a couple of years to understand the process, how it all works, and be able to work well with each other. You know, Senator Ferguson and I were elected, 8 years ago, served 4 years on a committee together. Now we're in two different committees, and we both have been able to really accomplish a lot of great things because it's taken us some time to develop relationships and understand the process. So, it'll be introduced, but I don't know where it'll go.
All right. Well, thanks to you both. I appreciate it. And we wish you luck as you continue your work and you continue your campaign for reelection. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Senator Bill Ferguson represents Baltimore City. Senator J.B. Jennings represents Baltimore County and Harford County and serves as the minority leader in the Maryland Senate. We're going to take a quick break. Coming up after the break, more legislative reaction to the 2018 Maryland General Assembly. Delegates Kathy Schlage and Luke Klippinger join me. You can join us, too. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayWIPR. To follow me on Twitter, @TomHall WIPR. You're listening to Midday. We appreciate that. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Jim Shea. He's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor, and he will join me live here in Studio A for the hour, and we hope you can join us as well. Coming up later today, a theater review with J. Wynn Russick. She'll give us her take on the current production at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. But first, back to our recap of the 2018 Maryland General Assembly. Now, perspectives from two members of the Maryland House. Republican Delegate Kathy Shalega, like Senator Jennings, with whom we spoke earlier, represents District 7 in Baltimore and Harford counties. She was first elected in 2011, and she has been the minority whip since 2013. She serves on the Health and Government Operations Committee, and she joins us this afternoon on the line from her office in Perry Hall. Delegate Shalega, welcome back to Midday.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And Democratic Delegate Luke Klippinger represents Baltimore City in District 46. He chairs the Democratic Caucus, and he serves on the Economic Matters Committee, and he's with us on the phone from Annapolis. Delegate Klippinger, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon.
You are welcome to join our conversation as well. 410-662-8780, our email midday at WIPR.org, our Twitter handle at midday. WIPR. So, Delegate Klippinger, if I can, if I may, let me start with you. There was a bill called SB 122, the Senate Bill 122, the Omnibus Crime Bill, which was winding its way through the process in the waning days of the session. And by the time the lights were turned off on Monday night, it had been broken into sort of component parts. This was a bill partially motivated by addressing the crime of or the problem of crime and violence in the city of Baltimore. Tell us what happened. That bill sort of got busted up into little sections. The whole thing didn't pass, but a few elements of it did. Explain what's now on the books.
There were two pieces of there were several pieces of legislation actually that moved forward in the last days of session. One of the pieces of legislation addressed a couple different issues related to violent criminals, to witness intimidation. The legislature, we passed legislation that raised the penalties for people who commit subsequent violent offenses. We raised the maximum penalty for those people who commit the crime of witness intimidation. We also expanded the state's rules regarding expungement, and in what I believe is a historic step forward, we expanded the ability of people who have been convicted of theft, of burglary, and of possession with intent to distribute to get those criminal records expunged after 15 years. It is a step that we have not taken before in the state of Maryland, and it has the potential, I think, to change thousands of lives. And just very briefly, I mean, there's a person in my district in O'Donnell Heights who I got to meet who was convicted of possession with intent to distribute some time ago. I'm going to go back and make sure, but I think it was about 15 years ago. She has been doing everything that what she needed to do and more, and in fact had received scholarships to be able to go back to school at UMBC and get her diploma. What we did in those bills in the end is we targeted those people, that small number of people who commit violent crimes, while still providing additional ways forward for people who have gotten their life back on track so that we can remove the stigma of that felony conviction from their record. And I think it's going to mean a lot to thousands and thousands of people.
And Delegate Shalega, what's your take on this? One of the controversies surrounding the original Senate bill, the so-called Omnibus Bill, which the governor supported, and it was sponsored by a Democratic legislator, so it had bipartisan support. The controversy concerned an emphasis on mandatory minimum sentences, for example. What's your feeling about how this bill looks now and perhaps how it should have looked in a prior incarnation?
Well, Delegate Klippinger and I worked together on getting these other two bills passed. Of course, Senator Bobby Zirkin had the Senate bill that came over to the House. I thought that was a great bill. I would have loved to have seen that passed, but how you make the sausages, you know, you have to work together to get things done, and I was really happy to be working with Delegate Klippinger to try to get these two good pieces of legislation, Senate Bill 1137 and Senate Bill 101, out of the House. So I think it goes back to what you were speaking with in the last segment with Senator Jennings and Senator Ferguson, that we really did have a feeling of bipartisanship this session, trying to work together to put our extreme differences aside and work together for the betterment of the state of Maryland, the people that are from Maryland. So I feel good about the session. I think it ended well. We got some things done on those crime bills, which, of course, eliminating parole eligibility for second-time violent offenders and toughening sentences on sexual abuse of minors. And so there were some really good things in those bills that our side of the aisle embraced.
And Delegate Klippinger, when it comes to public safety, as I mentioned, there was some no small bit of controversy about this notion of mandatory minimum sentences. Sometimes the governor would refer to it as truth in sentencing. In other words, people are sentenced to a crime and then they're released on parole. Is there data that you know of that says that mandatory minimums, which take away the prerogative for sentencing from judges and put it in the hands of the legislature by way of statute, is there evidence to your way of thinking that this is going to become a deterrent to crime, that this is actually going to punch a hole in this very difficult problem?
I think that what it does, first, when you talk about mandatory minimums, in my mind, mandatory minimums that are related to crimes that involve nonviolent acts, and I'm including drug possession in my mind as one of those nonviolent acts, those are absolutely proven not to help the people who have been sentenced in those cases, and in many cases, they don't address the overall issues related to mental health and addiction that need to be addressed in those specific cases. I think that when someone commits a violent crime twice, I think we as a society are in the right to say the second time you are going to get a higher penalty. You're going to get a higher penalty for committing an attempted murder twice or an armed robbery and a carjacking. These very, very serious crimes, the limited number of people who get convicted for a second violent crime is another thing to look at here, where it doesn't impact a huge number of people. Those people are the people who are causing the violence that's happening on our streets, and we have to have a clear message that says that is not acceptable.
Delegate Shalega, we have one of your constituents on the line, Morgan in Perry Hall. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for taking my question, Mr. Hall. To Delegate Shalega, I really have a question for you, why you voted nay against Senate Bill 1028, to ban conversion therapy for gay children in the state of Maryland. I was just really curious why you would do such a thing.
I appreciate you asking, Morgan, and I thought the bill went too far. And actually, I thought it was written in a way that was so broad that it prohibits talk therapy. Look, the conversion therapy, physical, I will even call it torture, is abhorrent, and no one's in favor of that. We had an amendment that we had offered in committee and on the floor. I would have absolutely voted for the bill if we had limited it to that. But the bill that passed actually includes talk therapy for adolescents. And I think, it actually discriminated, in my mind and in my view, against talk therapy that would be talking about heterosexual and only allowed, in my mind, gay talk therapy. So I just didn't think that was right. I think that we should be talking to our adolescents who are exploring their sexual orientation about both sides of the aisle and not being prescriptive and only talking about the one side of the aisle.
Yeah, very interesting bill in that there was a daughter in the House and a father in the Senate who are on opposite sides of that bill. Delegate Klippinger, let's talk a little bit about medical marijuana. The Legislative Black Caucus, Cheryl Glenn, who's the outgoing chair of that caucus, very happy with the fact that a new bill was passed in this session that barely, that almost got passed at the very, literally the midnight hour in 2017, that will, according to her reckoning, result in more minority-owned businesses getting involved in the medical marijuana industry.
I think it's a great step forward. Certainly, Delegate Glenn and Health and Government Operations Committee and committees in the Senate work very, very hard on this legislation to move the process forward, to clarify the process, and yes, to it will result in more minority participation in the medical marijuana process. And I sit not far away from Delegate Glenn in committee, and she poured her heart and soul into that for many, many years. And so I was very, very happy to see this cross the line for her.
And I'm a member of the Health and Government Operations Committee. We did work hard on that bill, expanding the number of processors as well, which I think is important to make sure that we have an adequate number of growers, but also processors, so that the product can get to the patients. I think, you know, the dispensaries are opening now, and really, I think we're all happy that finally we're getting medical marijuana to patients in the state of Maryland.
And Delegate Chalega, you're also, of course, a member of the Maryland Women's Caucus, a bill about sexual harassment in Annapolis, in the legislature, was also passed. Give us your take on of the importance and significance of that.
Sure. I think this year, a lot of things had come to light about sexual harassment, not just in the workplace, but in the House of Delegates, Senate, you know, in the Maryland legislature. So we did put some more teeth into the process, as well as making sure that everybody is aware that, look, this is obviously not acceptable behavior anywhere. And so I think that was another issue that we all came together in agreement on.
And Delegate Klippinger, one of the semi-controversial issues that came up during this session had to do with casino gambling revenue. Delegate McIntosh, one of your colleagues in the House who represents the city, proposed a constitutional amendment that the voters will vote on in November to allocate and earmark gambling revenues specifically for education. The governor supported the idea but had a different way of doing it. He thought it should be done by statute rather than as a constitutional amendment, but it will go to the voters in November. First of all, I assume you expect the voters to approve it, and why do you think doing it as part of the Constitution is a better way to go than a statutory approach?
Well, I think that the voters will approve it, and I think it's important to do it as a constitutional amendment because it's consistent. It makes clear the implication that was certainly made when casinos were voted on by referendum in the earlier part of the decade. The implication was that this money was going to be going to schools and not just to replace existing funding, but to supplement funding to improve our schools, to better target neighborhoods and neighborhood schools that have higher rates of poverty. And I think that that makes this very, very important going forward, and I'll be excited to vote for the constitutional amendment, particularly as we look forward to implementing the recommendations of the Kerwin Commission. We were able to set aside $200 million in this year's budget to look forward to those recommendations in Kerwin, and I think that that will have a huge impact for schools across the state of Maryland, but particularly in Baltimore City.
And Delegate Chalega, when it comes to tax relief, ironically, this tax cut passed by congressional and senatorial legislators last December. The Trump tax cuts, or the Ryan McConnell tax cuts, whatever you want to call them, are supposed to provide tax relief to a lot of people. But it turned out, given how that bill reckons with or reconciles with Maryland law, a number of people in Maryland were going to experience a tax hike. You were able to address that problem for many, but not quite all of the residents of Maryland. Are you satisfied that adequate tax relief will, in fact, come to Marylanders?
No, actually, that would probably be my biggest disappointment in this last legislative session. The tax cuts that came out of Washington were phenomenal. Across the board, everybody seeing their federal taxes decreased, and that's great, and you can see what a great help that is to the economy, and things are looking up. The high tax states like Maryland, Massachusetts, California are negatively impacted on the state side, not obviously the federal side. And so what we're seeing, and I'm hearing from constituents saying, hey, you know, I've got more in my paycheck because my federal taxes are lower, but I'm worried that I'm going to have to write a check to the state. So I really don't think that we adequately addressed that issue at all. And you can't, because people are not itemizing, we've simplified their federal tax system. It impacts that you can't itemize now on your state taxes if you don't itemize on your federal. And so I'm hopeful, though, next year when we come back after the election, that this will be an issue that we will address and that people will be doing their taxes right in the middle of session, and then we'll know that we really need to act and make sure that Marylanders get to keep their Maryland tax money and that they don't have to offset their federal tax cut with an increase in their Maryland taxes.
And, of course, next year, Delegate Klippinger, will not be an election year like it is this year. Certainly, voters are well aware of the fact that everything that happened in the session this year was done under the patina of the election cycle. Stephanie writes in that bipartisan congenial, well, maybe it was, but oh, please, it's an election year, and the governor is running for re-election. In his first 3 years, he resorted to name-calling and making little digs at particular lawmakers. His media trolling of Stephanie Rawlings Blake was epic, and in his fourth year, all of a sudden, he sees the light, and he must work with the General Assembly to accomplish legislative goals. Please. Now, Delegate Klippinger, the leadership in the Senate and the House agrees with the governor that this was a particularly bipartisan, productive session. What's your take?
I think there were a lot of accomplishments that we were able to move forward in a bipartisan manner, but there are a lot of things that we were able to move forward as Democrats that speak to our values. As you mentioned in the last section of the broadcast, you know, we've been working very, very hard, and we just talked briefly on the response to the GOP's tax bill and the president's tax bill. I mean, we are going to save 92% of Marylanders about $400 a year. We are increasing the standard deduction to take into account the changes from the federal level. We think we've done as best as we can to figure out how to hold Marylanders harmless for these tax changes. I think there are that's been our priority all the way along the way, and that's one of the differences, I think, between the parties in this next election. On top of that, I mean, our commitment still to education and to improving our state schools has been consistent and going to continue to provide a strong distinction, I think, between the two parties going forward. But nevertheless, you know, we are heading into this next, how many months now? 7 months now between now and the general election. I think there are going to be some clear distinctions that people are going to be able to make between whoever the Democratic nominee is and Governor Hogan.
And Delegate Chalega, let me give you the last quick word here. We are running out of time. There are 141 of your fellow delegates in the House. More than 40 of them will not return for one reason or the other next year. Do you expect next year to be a particularly different vibe than it was this year?
Of course, with all kinds of new folks, new faces in the legislature, it will obviously look much different, and I think next year we really will be embracing redistricting because we know that's going to be coming up. Governor Hogan, of course, that's been a major one of his platforms for the entire time that he's been in office, that we really need nonpartisan redistricting. And I believe when Governor Hogan gets reelected, we'll actually see that come to pass. So, you know, I think that Maryland's positioned well under Governor Hogan, and being able to create some bipartisanship, I think voters will just have to look back to when Governor O'Malley was governor and how partisan it was. Certainly it's a different flavor today, and I like it. I think taxpayers, I think citizens like it, and hopefully we can continue that going forward.
Republican Delegate Kathy Shalega represents District 7, and Democratic Delegate Luke Klippinger represents District 46 in the Maryland House of Delegates. Thanks to you both. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after a break, a review with theater critic Jay Wynn Russick. She's been to Frederick to check out the new show at the Maryland Ensemble Theater. She'll tell us what she thinks about it in exactly 90 seconds. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.